You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, welcome in to a new week of the Locked On Pacers podcast. I know we started off with the show already with Jeremiah Johnson, but we recorded it last week, but I hope you guys loved it. It was really fun to interview him. I'm your host, Tony East, with Everywhere, basically, and your co-host, as always, Adam Friedman is there on the other line. Adam, how are you, man?
I'm doing pretty well. It was a long weekend, no basketball. I mean, basketball, but I don't like also basketball that much, so boring overall weekend for me personally when it comes to basketball watching. Entertaining, but basketball returns soon. We're back for a week's show, so I'm all good and all excited once again.
Yeah, I'm not a big All-Star weekend guy either, but the Pacers were on the forefront of All-Star weekend. Oladipo getting the really cool Lee Jenkins piece, which was awesome. If you haven't read it, I don't know what you're doing. It's the best Pacers related piece probably this whole season. Victor Oladipo was dancing with cheerleaders. You know, it was a fun Pacers weekend.
Yeah, I read the Lee Jenkins piece actually earlier today. Like you said, I'd recommend anybody to read it. It was really, really good. I heard some of that about Depot before. He was on the Adrian Wojnarowski podcast, I think maybe around December time. He talked about some of the things with his father and stuff like that, but really interesting stuff there. But I think also the good part of the weekend was honestly the Rising Stars game with when Miles Turner and Depot showed up. Depot in the Sabonis jersey, that was kind of cool to see. And then Turner just kind of hanging around Sabonis. Just kind of cool to see the camaraderie of those three guys who are probably the three future pieces of this team.
I think Miles Turner would have been a better Team USA representative than Torian Prince.
But he's not allowed to because he's a third-year player, right?
Oh, right. Dang.
Did you forget that wrinkle?
I did. Wow. I was going to say he's a rising star in my heart, but then he can't be. So.
Yeah, because remember, it's first and second-year players. Oh, you're right. Realistically, really, it is. It's what it's supposed to. It used to be the sophomores versus the freshmen.
Yeah.
Quotations yeah. Around that because it's – You could be a freshman at any age, technically, in the NBA. But that's what it used to be. Then they've, like anything else, they kind of changed it around to make it more competitive and more interesting and whatnot. So, I don't know. I was, like, an okay fan of the world versus U.S., but I don't know if you kind of – I don't know, I guess, if there are maybe more than 12 U.S. young players deserving. I haven't really made a list or thought about it too hard, but I'm sure there's some USA – player that was in the first or second year that was like the 13th best player that's kind of pissy wasn't here this weekend, be my guess.
If their goal was to make it competitive, they failed.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was more interesting to make it more fun, might be the right way to put it. I don't know if it was to make it more competitive.
And I get that the whole All-Star weekend is to draw audience and fans, and if you have a roster of international players, you're way more likely to draw international fans. So I get it, but the world team just kicked ass with Sabonis at the helm too.
Yeah, and I think part of it, too, like you were saying, is you're trying to draw in. You know, when you do an entire world team, you get basically players. I mean, now with the way it is, you get like, Ben Simmons, who's Australian, but, like, I don't know how much counts as world. And then you got, like, Wiggins at one point, who's Canadian, but played in USA college basketball. But you get some of the Eastern European players who don't get a lot of spotlight, like Bogdanović, who won the MVP.
Markkanen, yeah. Yeah,
Markkanen. You get spotlights on those. Markkanen would have made it no matter what, though. I mean, he's been awesome. Right. But you get spotlights on a couple of those bottom world guys who are – probably were the best player in their country or one of the best, you know what I mean, before they came to the NBA. At least, you know, you get to bring those kind of fans in. And a lot of it's Eastern European countries, too, that could kind of brought in that sort of helping expand the NBA brand.
Yeah, I love it. Like, Embiid is the only African, I believe, who played. That's really cool. You know, the continent's a whole continent basically rooting for a guy, even though he was into the skills contest and the game, so he didn't play a whole ton. But, yeah, that is a cool idea to draw guys in. And Sabonis got the Lithuanian crowd on their feet.
He did, and he played really well, I thought. I mean, you know, it's funny. So this is kind of where I wanted to ask you about it, is if you really watch the World game and then you watch the All-Star game, Sabonis comp, I think, for me, is Al Horford.
I would love it if Sabonis turned into Al Horford.
Yeah, so, like, my thought is his peak, probably the peak best Sabonis you're going to get is Al Horford, which Al Horford would play in the All-Star game, but they both did kind of the same things for their All-Star teams, where they were like the guy who wasn't worried about scoring or just jacking up three-point shots. It was like, I'm going to go rebound, I'm going to cut the right ways and get layups and things like that. And they both sort of did that for their teams in a different sense because Horford was playing with a lot better players. But it just seemed like that sort of Sabonis' destiny, if he ever becomes, you know, keeps improving and it really works his way into an All-Star game, it's like as the 24th guy in an Al Horford spot.
Yeah, Al Horford does all the little things, you know. I love that they tracked the screen assists in the All-Star game. Al Horford did not have one, but Al Horford's a really good screener and he's a good defender in space and he stretches out the floor. And Sabonis has like all the base of being a player like that. He just has to put it all together. But, you know, I feel like they kind of move the same way, you know, you feel like they kind of run the same way.
Yeah, no, I also feel like that when they are down low, they have some of the same kind of like, I think Sabonis is a little more like spinny and polished. And when it comes to like trying to spin his way to the rim off his foot, and he's left-handed. So that gives him an up, I think, on player because they forget that, but they seem like they kind of have the same sort of like the rope. They don't need to, they like to play off the ball and move and set screens off the ball a ton. And you kind of just like, they're like the directing path to the offense where he comes to the top of the key, gets the ball and passes it out to the other shooting guard. And it's not a lot of like, put the ball in his hand, let him dribble and create. It's sort of just him and pushing the offense, keeping it flowing in some sense. And Horford does a lot of that.
Yeah. And Horford is like one of the most underrated players in the NBA. You know, no one who's like a casual fan would know that Al Horford is like a very, very deserving All-Star.
Yeah. He's, I mean, the best way to say it is he is like, that does every little thing right and together makes him a good player. Like,
who wrote this? It was, I think it was Spencer Davies at Basketball Insiders. I might be wrong, but it's like when Sabonis is on the court, his directive is just always to like be doing a positive play, you know? Like, he's always like looking to make a positive play, even when he doesn't have the ball, like whether it be cutting or screening or just moving out of the way. You know, he's so good at that.
Yeah. And he also does a really good job, I think, of just being able to set the screen and really without like, you know, with Turner, sometimes he sets the screen, it's called for a foul or doesn't quite set the screen the right way. So Sabonis seems like you can like reliably have him send a pick and roll. Like you just, that's like a reliable play to go to constantly. And if you watch the pick and roll with Kyrie Irving and Horford, it's very similar to the Sabonis Depot one. Obviously I think the Horford Kyrie is much better because it's two extremely talented players versus like Depot is extremely talented and Sabonis is like a up and coming player, but it's some of that same type of style. And I wonder if that's almost how McMillan watches tape and sees what Horford and Kyrie are doing and says, we can do that with Depot and Sabonis in some sense.
I hope they're doing that because those would be a great two guys to model it after. And doing anything the way Brad Stevens coaches it is a good way to do it. You know, you told me before you had a take for me about Sabonis and I didn't know what it was, but that's a good one. I actually really like that comparison.
Yeah. And it was just more even of a deep dive where I was honestly looking into. So I did like that pop from the All-Star Weekend was just like, I saw Horford play and I saw Sabonis play and I thought they're kind of the same, doing the same things. And then I sort of like dove into how relatable this team is to the 14-15 Hawks team. I know they're not as good, but like, you know, there is some comparisons to the players on the Pacers and the players on that 14-15 Hawks team in the sense of like, it was like five guys who are sort of all kind of this, like, I mean, it's kind of where the Pacers could be next year is what I mean. It's where like, it was five players who were, none is like the most, is like the dominant guy, which I think that's probably how their destiny is. And Depot isn't the dominant scorer he is this year. Like, you know, other guys pick up the slack, but you could see that with like a Bojan, Collison, Vic, Sabonis, Turner lineup as being similar to that 14-15 Hawks team next year.
They just, none of them are like super, like stars even, but they just fit super well together and they pass it a zillion times.
And like, even the player by player, like Bojan comps to Korver really well in some sense. I think Korver is obviously like an all-time great three-point shooter, but that's kind of that similar model. And then you look at like the Horford Sabonis model and then you get the Millsap and Turner kind of thing going. And there's just a lot of like interesting comps, but the one difference is the Pacers have Oladipo, who might be better than any of those five players are.
Right. Exactly. Now. And that's why it's really hard to find a good comp for like a good fitting team with one star. Like maybe the Spurs, not like peak Spurs, but like a good Spurs team. But yeah, there's a lot of chances for them to be a team like that. And we've already seen signs of it.
Yeah, I mean, the best comp, honestly, right now is the John Wall-less Wizards team. I mean, they're basically the same. It really is. You look at the
– No, you're right.
And what was sad, we didn't get to see the game they played on that Monday. Depot was sick, so we didn't get to play. But and I think they're going to play. They played in a couple weeks. I don't know if Wall will be back yet. But that, like, they're basically the same – Pacers and the Wizards would be the same team then, led by a dominant shooting guard who can at times play point guard, but you don't play him at point guard all the time, but we'll play him at, say, 34% of the time. And then you got a bunch of, like, different pieces around him who do different – each has a little different skill set.
Yeah, and you know, and they have space to add more guys who fit right into that, like the Wizards kind of have, because Satoransky just slid right in so seamlessly and made it all happen. But, you know, you have Kelly Oubre, who fits right in with everybody, and Mahidmi, besides his penchant to foul, fits right in with everybody. So that's a good comp in general, just that the seven guys just work out really well. So, you know, if they add more guys, that's even better.
Yeah, and – like I don't know if there's like a, like, you know, there's some comp too with this Pacer team to the team of 12 and 13 too. That's a little different, obviously, with Paul George, but it's the same kind of concept where you just have to build, you build on depth, and that's how you win. Like the Raptors doing that right now, where they've got like a 10 deep roster almost. And that's how you sort of win your way to 50 or plus games, which is successful no matter, I mean, no matter if you don't win the championship, not winning 50 or more games a season is a successful season no matter what happens. Unless like you're LeBron, because you win 50 games every year. But for most teams, winning 50, 60 games is considered success. So that's just some of my musing thoughts from over the All-Star weekend, because, you know, I try to make it as entertaining as possible in my mind.
That was pretty good. I have a musing for the rookie sophomore / world game. One more.
All right, go ahead.
I think, well, this is less of a musing, but this Sabonis kind of reminded me of the Sabonis at the beginning of the year when he, in the Pacers 4 wins, did not miss a shot. And in the Pacers losses, he missed a shot because he went 6-for-6 and had 11 rebounds. I was like, wow, that's so like early Pacers Sabonis.
It kind of shows too how if he's open, he just knocks down everything.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I think it's an easy thing to say. NBA players, you watch a lot of NBA guys like in shoot-arounds, they don't miss a shot. I mean, they're really good three-point. Like J.R. Smith is famous for not missing three-point shots in shoot-around. Like, he just makes every single one. But, you know, it's just interesting that means that you can probably somewhat build some kind of offense as Sabonis as a third option. If he can make knockdown shots consistently, like, you know, you can try to run things to get him wide open on the baseline or things like that at times. So,
All-Star weekend of defense, but yeah, he made all the shots.
No, but I mean, like, teams don't play defense, but like on the All-Star weekend, but in reality, the third option, a lot of teams can get wide open looks. I mean, you can, the third guy is what makes or break a team. I mean, with the Warriors, it's like everything is on teams direct the ball to Draymond Green. And if he's shooting his three and hitting them, they win. If he's not, they lose.
Yeah, you just lose. If he's making his threes, you just lose. Like, that's it.
Yeah, so if Sabonis can consistently knock down 12-footers, consistently get good, like figure out how to cut to the rim at the right times, and he's your third option on the Pacer team, it's not a bad thing. You'll be a very fortunate team.
Yeah, we have a lot of takeaways from a Rising Stars game.
Yeah, I don't know.
Sabonis,
I
mean, is exciting, man. He surprises me more every day.
He is really exciting because he's like a traditional center, but he like moves more like a unicorn type center.
So mobile that it changes everything for me because yeah, he has the skills with the ball of a traditional center, but his feet are so fast that he can do a lot of other stuff.
Yeah, and I never watched his father that much, and apparently that's how his father played. But you got to think some of his footwork is just so good and so natural. It's got to be either from his father training him or I don't know what it's just natural, but he moves in a way that just like. It's everything that Pacers wanted out of Tyler Hansbrough and never got, to be honest. I've heard that before, but it's kind of like that. Like, it's what the Pacers thought Hansbrough could be, and it's kind of what Sabonis is, and it's really dumbfounding.
We were having so many good comparisons, and then we drop us some bonus Hansbrough
comparisons. No, it's a comparison for the Pacers only because I think it's what the Pacers thought Hansbrough was going to be, and he wasn't. Right. It wasn't a comp. I don't think they're similar, but it's just kind of what they thought. But it's just amazing that you could watch Sabonis play in college and then watch him practice and then the Thunder to say, oh, yeah, you're going to be a three-point shooter. Like, it's just dumbfounding that the Thunder, I thought were a well-coached team, but I'm really starting to think they really just aren't because they clearly didn't understand how to play either Depot or how to play Sabonis, who were clearly two extremely young assets who were continuing to improve, and they just didn't know how to play them. And it might just be Billy Donovan, but it's kind of crazy.
I think they had that problem before Billy Donovan.
Well, yeah, and they kind of had that problem this year too.
They fired Scott Brooks, basically.
And honestly, it might be Westbrook. It honestly just might be all of Westbrook, and he just clogs up things because of the way he plays and so dominant, which it's fine. You limit that. Westbrook's an awesome player, but you see it now too with the Thunder. They really have some issues with being able to run to the offense at times, and Carmelo always being open and like by design sometimes. It's weird. It's weird.
What would happen if a roster was 5 Russell Westbrooks?
It would miss a lot of threes. Right, I mean, it would take a lot of open threes and miss them. Westbrook has got some of the worst 3-point stats for like you take minimums of so many shots taken. But it would move at such a fast pace that it would be scary. And I don't know. I'm trying, that's about all I can think of.
They would all steal each other's rebounds, and the world would explode.
I think that's what kind of Westbrook has that like Michael Jordan in him, but he's not as like. He just can't be as dominant as Jordan because he can't be a dominant defensive end as Jordan was because he doesn't have the height. Where he wants the ball and he can score at will sometimes, but he can't affect the game on the defensive end the way Jordan could, and that's what's holding him back.
Exactly. Yeah. But you never know. We'll see what happens as time goes on.
Yeah, and honestly, the reason we're talking such about the Rising Star games is because it was the most interesting part. I know we're going to talk about it. Depot played in the dunk contest and the All-Star game, but Sabonis was the most exciting part for Pacer fans, at least.
I'm going to ramble now about the next event, though, a little bit. Go ahead. So, no Pacers in this event, but the Skills Challenge was the first thing of, like, the Saturday thing. And the Skills Challenge is actually my favorite event. And, you know, I just like the one-on-one tournament style, and it makes me think, like, there should totally be a knockout tournament at All-Star Weekend.
So I heard horse.
Okay, that'd be fun too. But it has to be trick shots.
Yeah, horse, you have to do like either it has to be a cool dunk or a certain distance shot.
Yeah, yeah. Because it'd be boring if they were just like, oh, here's a corner three, like, you know. But I love the Skills Challenge because like they're racing and they're you know, Joel Embiid's sprinting and dribbling and like Spencer Dinwiddie's chucking a 30-footer because Jamal Murray is like ahead of him. Like it's awesome. I think that's like the peak event.
Yeah, I don't like the Skills Challenge.
I liked it. It was fun. But no Pacers in it.
Go ahead. I think it's a stupid event, to be honest. I think it's the worst event of the weekend. It's why it goes first.
Wow, it's my favorite. That's funny.
It's just like, I don't know. I think it was funny when your Lou Williams joke was hilarious, by the way. I thought it was funny. I laughed.
Three passes.
It was great. I mean, your joke was that Lou Williams was passable anyway, so why would it matter? I mean, you're definitely right, but I just think it's just like not that interesting because like they have to do something different where it has to be like you have to make two threes or three because like it seems like if you don't make that pass you lose, and I understand that's like part of it, but it's just like it makes it like kind of seem not competitive because most of these guys can knock down 3-point shots in one try.
The champion was last going into his 3-pointer twice though. He just happened to get down there and drill it.
No, the champion.
Dinwiddie, so Markkanen beat him down there, and then he got the three before him, and Jamal Murray beat him down there too.
I thought Markkanen won.
Did he? No, Dinwiddie won.
Did he?
Spencer Dinwiddie. Did he? Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he did. maybe I've been watching only the second round of it.
Well, that's I guess that's the end of that if you don't like it.
Yeah, I don't like the Rising Stars. Not the Rising Stars. I don't like the Skills Challenge. I really just don't.
The 3-point contest is the most boring one to me.
Yeah, no, I like it.
We have opposite shape. All right, let's get it over with. Get the Paul George stuff over with. I'll plug my ears.
Oh, I was going to talk about Paul George. I was going to give a shout out to defending champion Eric Gordon.
Oh, yes, and that.
Indianapolis native. Comes on, I was cheering for him. Last year, the state of Indiana dominated the dunk contest with Glenn Robinson and Eric Gordon winning it. Gordon sadly shot a 9, just as bad as Paul George, who tried to bank in a 3. I don't know. That was funny.
All right, it's over with. Okay, we're done. Yeah, the 3-point contest was just meh. I thought Bradley Beal was going to win. Devin Booker dominated, like, substantially.
I think it's only fun because when you get down to, like, the most dominant 3-pointers, like, I thought the Klay Thompson versus Devin Booker matchup was, like, it was incredible.
Yeah.
Just because, like, those are two guys of the most knockdown 3-point shooters in the league. I mean, like,
probably the best form in the NBA besides Alex Sabrinas on those guys.
Yeah, and you know, I think part of this weekend, too, is you don't always get the best players to play in it. Like, at least in the 3-point contest, you usually get the best, you know, at least pure form-wise. I mean, I know Curry's the best 3-point shooter, but Klay Thompson is the best form shooter in the league, and might be number 2.
Yeah, Abrinas.
Okay. All right, Abrinas.
I love Alex Abrinas' form. But, yes, those are some of the top 5 guys for sure.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about Alex Abrinas, a guy who barely plays 20 minutes a game. Right. I mean, he might got more now.
All he can do is shoot threes with his beautiful.
Talking about, I mean, like Klay Thompson and Devin Booker are legitimate stars in this league who are
no doubt.
are going to be, I mean, Booker's going to be a dominant player someday, and Klay Thompson could lead his own team if he wants it to it someday, too.
Right. But now we have to move on to an event the Pacer was in and did not do too well in the dunk contest.
Yeah. Overall, I thought Depot should have bailed on his dunk the third attempt and go for something to just get some points and try to run it again the second time, but he didn't. But there are a lot of gripes with this thing. Do you want to start with talking about the judging, the scoring? What was the most frustrating part of this?
I'm fine with the judging and scoring, actually. I thought it was fine. I think I'm in the weird minority about the dunk contest because like these dunks are sick. Like they're so hard to do. It's just like Blake Griffin and then the 2015 contest ruined it because they were unreal. And like, they're never going to be that good again, but people have that expectation because Aaron Gordon and Zach LaVine went like 7 rounds of sick dunks. And then Blake Griffin jumped over a flipping car. But, you know, every other dunk contest has kind of just been like this one where it's like some cool stuff that is really hard to do. It just doesn't seem that crazy compared to other stuff like that Nance one where he came from behind the basket and was falling away from the rim when he dunked. Like that was insane to me, but, The only judging gripe I have is giving Depot a 31 when he missed.
Yeah, so this I've got a couple of changes for it, and let me know if you think of any that are bad ideas or good ideas, all right? So first, I think they should change the scoring from each judge gives a 1 to 50 score and take the average. Because then you can factor in the fact that he misses the dunk and all the things a little better. You know, a 1 through 10 score, you really – it's like you're all, if you're not near somebody, it looks weird. You know what I mean? So that's a little easier. I think you can factor in some of that. Two, I think there should be more dunks in the first round. So, like, maybe 3 first-round dunks. Because why do you need to have – like, you could even do 4 and just have the winner be who has the best score instead of doing a final round. Like, why does there need to be a final round? I don't understand that either because, you know, it's only 4 players. Not like it's, like, the 3-point lines where there's 8 guys and then you're eliminating down. It's like you've got 4 – you're saying 4 incredible dunkers. Let them all do 4 dunks because it'll be still be entertaining. Even if the guy is not going to win on his 4th dunk, he'll still do something cool. So it'll be entertaining and whatnot. So that's another change I think they should do. And then the judging, they either got to add some kind of fan component to it just so, because if you're going to really make this about the fans, you're going to let like DJ Khalid who score it, whatever, you got, why not let the fans vote? Why not give a vote to like a texting vote into the people out there or watching it or whatnot? Like do something like that. Like it just, if you're clearly not taking the judging that seriously,
then it's a popularity contest.
But like the 4 guys in the contest, right? Were Donovan Mitchell, Depot, Larry Nance. And who was the 4th?
Dennis Smith.
4 guys who are not like household names yet. They might be someday, but none of them are like extremely popular people yet. They're not like, you know, I mean, most people probably couldn't pick the 4 of them out of an NBA lineup of players.
I bet you could get, most could get 3 of them. I bet most people wouldn't get Nance.
I would say people wouldn't get Nance. I would say Depot is getting there almost. And I would say Mitchell and Smith are rookies. So they're just not. Mitchell has kind of ascendance, so maybe, but they're both not that known.
That's fair. And like, I don't know. I like this dunk contest more than last year's, actually, even though Glenn Robinson won. But, and I get the gripes with the judges because it seems lame that, like, I think it's lame that they're maxed out at 50, right? Because then it makes 2 dunks that are both sick. Like, okay, those both deserve 50s, but one was better than the other still because there's a max.
That's why the 1 through 50 score would be better. Because
yeah, I agree. That actually is a good idea.
Take the average. But my thing was, if you're going to make like DJ Khalid and Mark Wahlberg, 2 guys who are just as have the same like opinion or view as most NBA fans, like they don't know anything about basketball. Like they know anything about basketball, but like not even more than the average fan. Why not let the fans get 1 spot? Like I'm not saying you give them like most people, make 1 judge the fan vote. That way it wouldn't like overweigh it, but it would have some way in it. So you have to like entertain the people, maybe put people in the stands or whatever, something like that. Something just to add something that makes it a little more interactive, because it seems kind of dumb to put in the hands of DJ Khalid, to be honest. I mean, that's in Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, Mark Wahlberg should be the one we're grilling.
And Chris Rock. Like, none of these people are more informed basketball fans than any other.
Lisa Leslie's the only qualified person.
Exactly. She's the only one that I thought was actually qualified, and that was it, because she played basketball. And, you know what I mean? Besides, the rest of them are no more qualified than the rest of us.
Yeah. But the actual contest itself, I enjoyed it. Depot's first dunk was insanely hard, which, by the way, got a 31 even though he missed. His second dunk was just for the crowd thing, putting on the Black Panther mask.
How much do you think he got paid for that?
A lot. He also got $20,000 for getting last place. I didn't know that.
Do you think, though, he also put on because part of his hair and things like that, and they were trying to kind of – he was trying – you know, he's from – I'm blanking on the country he's from. It's in that article I read today. Where are his parents from? They emigrated from
– oh, I don't know. I should know that, and I know.
It was in the article this morning, and I'm completely blanking, so I'm not going to say it. I don't want to butcher it. I don't want to say the wrong country, but
you think that was part of it? Type it in.
All right. But I'm wondering if that was part of it, just like – just the representation for the movie and stuff like that, whether it was that's why he also did it. But he probably also got paid. I mean, they were trying to hype up this movie and get it, whatever, shoot it to, I think they're trying to hit like $300, $400 million box office.
No.
The highest rated superhero movie. So I imagine he got some money for it. But
For sure. It was like the movie came out that weekend. They had to promote it.
Yeah, but I thought that was kind of interesting. I liked how there was a cool picture of him posing with Chad Broswick, and this guy's name, who played Black Panther. I thought that was kind of cool.
Crud, I can't find it. I'm reading down in the article, and I'm getting nowhere.
Yeah, his parents – I know it said his parents emigrated, I forget from what country, like 32 years ago. And that's like – and that's – there's the article, again, is this article by Lee Jenkins and SI that was really good that you people should read out there. I mean, it was
– Nigeria. Boom.
Nigeria. Okay. That's what I thought. I just didn't want to butcher it. I didn't want to say, like, the wrong country.
Right. No, yeah. I'm glad you got it right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, and the mask thing was cool, like to put a culture reference in. It's just like, I don't know. I did not like the costume thing. Like everyone were breaking out the old dunks. I think you should get deducted for not being original if you put on Vince Carter's jersey.
Yeah, I agree with that. But what do you think of then the like the sponsoredness? Because I mean, Kia sponsored Blake Griffin's. That was
I know.
You're like, if you draw a line between wearing a jersey and wearing, you know, the Black Panther mask, but then you're cutting out sponsors who this weekend's really just a giant commercial event to make money off of.
I know. I keep being a hypocrite about this. Some things I don't like others.
Yeah, no, it's hard to. I agree. I also didn't like the choice of the purple jersey with those red and yellow shorts. Yeah. Like, Mitchell, wear the dark blue shorts. It just didn't go well. That's personally. But
it's funny, and because I just said, like, oh, I don't like the unoriginality, but I loved Nance doing the exact dunk his dad did. So it's like,
yeah. I also thought the Black Panther mask went really well with the Pacers jersey he was wearing.
It did. I love those jerseys.
If only those had been in black and white, it would have been like a great just like look. Because
I love it.
Like the actual checkered flag look instead of like, I know those were leaked at one point, right? The Pacers was going to be the checkered flag instead of the blue and yellow.
Shout out to Conrad Burry for always leaking the jerseys. He is super good at getting that information.
Yeah, he was close in all of them.
I know. He does not get enough credit. That was a really good journalism.
But were you shocked by Larry Nance? I'm the minute Nance went under that thing, I'm like, oh, he's putting on his dad's jersey. Like I said it before I even saw it.
A lot of people knew. Yeah. I thought he was gonna do that dunk at some point. I didn't think he'd do it in the jersey. But once I saw the tent come up, I was like, all right, yeah, he's doing that.
For sure. But actually probably Depot's best dunk was the one in the All-Star game, right?
Oh, it was awesome. He stole the ball too. Oh, that was beautiful.
Yeah, it was basically the only impact he made in the game.
Hey, he was a -3 and had 7 points in 15 minutes.
Let it be known, though, on Sunday, you did say he was going to take 4 shots. He took, like, only 8. So
I know. When your team averages 10 shots per person.
That's close. I would say saying he had the least amount of shots on the team, right?
No, fourth lowest.
Oh, he did? Really?
He got more than Drummond, Dragic, and LaMarcus Aldridge.
Okay. I didn't realize.
He played more than Dragic and Aldridge.
Yeah. Can we understand why did Jimmy Butler not play in this game? He said he was sick.
Yeah, that was odd.
You think it was some hangover from the weekend?
I don't know. That's lame.
He might have the flu. The flu is going around, so that's always been an issue.
Yeah. And I get it. Like, it sucks that you're sick, but like the whole thing is like four guys sat out because they were injured, and someone else got like their once in a lifetime opportunity. Like Chris Paul should have totally been playing.
But. What I like most about the All-Star Weekend, or this game, the All-Star Game at least, is not necessarily the game or anything like that. It's the fact that it's sort of like a coronation in some sense. It's like really cool just to see, like, these are the best 25 or end up being like 29, 30 this year because of so many injuries, players to play basketball on this planet. And it's like, for first-time guys like Oladipo, it's like this whole coronation of you've kind of made it into this exclusive club of players. And it's just kind of cool. Like, you know, the NFL, the Pro Bowl is so weirdly diluted because, you know, Super Bowl teams don't play in it and players don't play in it because they're hurt. So you don't always get like the top talent. But the NBA, you almost always get like the top 30 players are there. And it's the best 30 players in the world. And I think that's what the best part of it. It's just kind of the coronation of the event.
Yeah, it's got to be cool looking around. Like, this isn't, I don't know. Like, imagine being Al Horford and looking around and being like, I'm an all-star and I'm the worst guy here. Like, these guys are amazing at basketball.
No, and you look around too, and you're like somebody like Depot, who was 25. He looks around and says, "I might be as good as these guys." Oh, I'm like I saw him next to Westbrook, and I'm like, their body types are pretty similar. Him and Westbrook, he didn't look smaller than Westbrook. Like I remember last year he didn't look that way, but this year he looks to be on par. I mean, Embiid is another example of a guy who looks the part, and it's just sort of this like moment, I think, for some of these players, which is like I know winning a championship is like the pinnacle, but making the All-Star game as an NBA player is like a pinnacle moment for a single person. It's like you have made it, you've worked your entire life to be the best NBA player on the planet, and you are one of them. You're in the top 1% of 1% of 1% of basketball players.
And you led the game in steals because you're Victor Oladipo.
Because nobody plays defense.
No, they don't.
Except in the last play when he trapped Curry.
I got to give him credit for doing something. Yeah, he trapped Curry and he got us that. Well, I guess he had two dunks. He had the alley-oop too with LeBron, right? But I know we're both talking about the one where he stole it on the break and then did the windmill spin three.
I also called that LeBron dunk, by the way.
The pass?
Well, no, I said him and Deepa were going to have some kind of dunk, something cool.
Yeah, you tweeted it. Or did you say it or tweet it? I don't remember.
I said that on the podcast on Sunday that we did.
Yeah, listen to the Pacers. We got to plug that. We listened to the Pacers Pride podcast. We hung out with some other Pacers podcast people. It was really fun.
Yeah. So we both were right on some predictions. They took 120 shots, though. Holy crap.
That's crazy. Well, that some of those possessions are just like Dame Lillard dribbles twice across half court and just flings it. But
he played pretty well, though.
And Dame was my favorite guy to watch because that's how I want the All-Star game to be.
Yeah. If he had finished the game for them, he was, and they might have won. Actually, I don't want to start, but they played a weird lineup in the game. Like it's, I don't know. Like yeah. Harden had been terrible all day. Maybe D'Antoni had to play Harden.
They were down three, and they had DeRozan in.
Yeah, and maybe D'Antoni had to play Harden because he's his own coach, possibly, and he could not play Curry because he was. Both those guys are pretty bad compared to Lillard, who had a pretty good night. I thought Lillard was the best player on that team. I thought most of the night, him and Thompson really.
Lillard was awesome. Clay was really good too.
Yeah,
Lillard was a plus 18.
Yeah, Lillard was 9 of 14. Yeah. Curry was 4 of 14. Harden was 5 of 19 and 2 for 13 from 3. James Harden.
Let him chuck. Yikes. He made assists, though. Kyle Lowry was dishing him out, too.
Yeah, but people are loving us reading this box score. Sorry.
in a game you watch, like the Pacers games, it's like, okay, I can kind of get a feel for what the box score is. But in a game like this where it ends 148 to 145, like I'm seeing these sets and thinking, oh, this happened. You know, like.
Yeah, no, and it's hard to get a feel because the average NBA score is probably like in the low 100s, mid 100s, like the low 100, 105s, that range, sort of by 105 to 108 points per game. So
yeah.
it's like a full 40% more.
Exactly, and it's hard to – and just because it's all exciting too, like, oh, there's an alley-oop and there's a 90-foot three. Like, it's just – you're not as into the, oh, my gosh, Kyle Lowry is feeding everybody.
Yeah, and I did like the fact that they mixed up the conferences because I think it actually is the reason LeBron's team won, because I think KD knew what Steph and Clay were trying to do for Steph and Clay. And he's like, just trap him in the corner, and trap him in the corner, and he can't get out of it. You know, force him to do something. You know, like that.
Last possession, change the and won them the game.
Yeah, no, and it worked. And you could see in the huddle too. They were showing some highlights from the game, and like in the huddle, LeBron, KD, and whoever, Dwayne Casey is the coach of LeBron's team, were like saying, we're gonna trap Curry if he gets the ball. So they were saying, trap him in the corner, trap him in the corner.
And they got it. And then DeRozan, it was funny. I saw a tweet about this, so I'm not taking credit for this funny thought, but it was true because DeRozan is so like allergic to three-point shooting. He caught it with 1 second left down three and almost tried to drive baseline before he had to fade away and chuck it up.
Yeah. And who was it? Was it Drummond or Aldridge? No, I'm trying to – not near them. It was – no, because Embiid didn't play. Somebody was standing there and could have got the ball and passed it back out for a three-point shot, but Curry missed it.
Too. Yeah, he just didn't see it because he was trapped between two huge guys.
Who was the fifth guy out there? It was Curry, Harden, DeRozan, and Giannis. Who was the fifth guy?
Towns, right?
Oh, right. It was Towns. And Towns was standing there. Embiid didn't play. Towns was sitting there, and they could have – and Towns had it and could have kicked out to Harden to tie the game. Like, that pass was there, but – what it is,
whatever, it's a game, it's an all-star game.
Yeah, that's the only thing I could say in this game is hopefully Oladipo make it back and he'll be joined by another Pacer at some point.
Yeah, he said to Lee Jenkins he wants to come back all the time,
which he's gonna have to put. I mean, the thing is, once you make it once,
yeah, that's
he doesn't have to have another 25 point a game season.
That's what I was gonna say, 21 too.
Or 22, but if the team is still winning, he'll get their respect.
We were talking about when we like way earlier in the season before it was obvious Oladipo was gonna make it, like, oh, it's going to be hard for him to beat out Kyle Lowry because Lowry's got the pedigree. But now he has the pedigree, too.
Yeah. And so. He's having a much better season than Lowry. I mean, Lowry's come back recently, but Lowry had a terrible start.
He's having a better season than Lowry, not much better. Lowry did have a better start.
If you take the 55 games, Lowry had like a terrible start, and that's why he's having a much better season. But till recently now, Lowry's fine.
Lowry's been awesome for the last like 45 games. He's a plus-minus monster.
Yeah, and he's going to be awesome in the playoffs if he stays healthy.
Yeah, hopefully, man. I want the Raptors to put together. Anyway, you got anything else from All-Star Weekend?
I think I'm all good on everything. I hit everything I need to hit. Like I said, hopefully there'll be another Pacer, so maybe Miles Turner will be there someday.
I have one more thing, actually. I forgot. Daquan Jones of the Fort Wayne Mad Ants wins the G League Dunk Contest.
Oh, that's right. And supposed was watching it.
Apparently. Yeah, yeah. And I actually saw the dunk. I forget. I think the Mad Ants actually tweeted it out. It was pretty good. It was actually pretty impressive. So if you haven't seen it, go watch that. Give the Mad Ants some love. They deserve it.
Yeah, and we should probably hit some shout out that hopefully we'll see Glenn Robinson, who's been playing with the Mad Ants for a while again on Friday. And there's going to be – we got a big podcast coming up on Thursday. It's going to post is this big future salary cap one Tony and I did. Love to get some opinions on what people think of it when it posts, because it was kind of something new we were trying out. So that's what we got coming up this week. And we got to, obviously, our end of, we're going to do a weekend preview at the end of the week.
We will. You guys will know the drill. We do the same stuff all the time. It'll be good. We have be on the lookout for a mailbag too. Questions, get them in.
Yeah. Mailbag Friday as well.
Yeah, it's coming. But thanks for listening. You got anything else, Adam? You got an article coming out, don't you?
I got one coming out on Wednesday. I'm writing it right now. I'm calling it right now Post All-Star Things You Need to Know, sort of primer, since no, I don't know. I'll title it later. But one thing about mailbag questions, send your best ones. We'll try to use the best ones. Please make them your best. If they're not good, we won't use them. Sorry.
I've used every single one that's been asked so far.
All right. Well, we'll see how many we get.
I would love one not basketball question. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Let's put it this way. Any question within reason, it can't be ridiculous, but we'll answer some random questions that people have.
Yes.
About just stuff, life. We'll give life advice. That's like used to be a thing in the old Ryan Russillo show. Peace and blessings to Ryan Russillo, who is no longer.
If you are listening to me and Adam for advice, you are slightly misguided.
I used to love that, man. I'm so mad Ryan Russillo isn't on the air.
I know, anymore. Man.
Man,
I think our podcast would be the best podcast in the world if I just had his voice. Even if I just was meeting his voice.
That dude was destined for radio. I don't know how he didn't get started in it. When he talks about how he didn't start there, he has the perfect voice for just radio.
Man, we have been awful about closing out shows.
Yeah, no, this has become a staple of our show, our end of show banter.
Yeah, the Thursday one, guys, we recorded it already when you're hearing this, and we went off the rails on that one.
I tried to bring us back in. We were staying on topic a couple times. It's fine. It worked out. I think we made some good points and arguments about the future of the Pacers. So I think people will enjoy it, but I'd love to get some opinions on what other people think.
Yeah, people tweeted me these kind of questions a lot. So we go through the decision-making process of some of, you know, what we personally think and what the team's going to have, how the team's going to have to think it through and decide.
Yeah. And Tony has like this great salary cap sheet for the team that like it spits out numbers and and how much you have in cap space and all the stuff. It's great. It's a great little sheet to use.
Gonna make it better eventually. I'm just lazy.
Yeah. All right. I think now I'm out of stuff to talk about.
I am also out of stuff to talk about. If you haven't listened to the JJ interview, go do it. It was really fun to listen to. You can follow Adam at FreedomAdam5. I'm at TEastNBA. We are at Locked On Pacers. We might have an announcement coming up soon, so we'll let you know about that. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you Thursday. I'm going to say tomorrow, Thursday.